And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. Well, fresh from its New York debut, where the show was so well received it was extended three times, comes a new work rooted in the largely unknown but true history of Jewish slaveholders in the South. This new play is a powerful exploration of lives that come unraveled as the ravages of slavery are revealed at the close of the Civil War. The Whipping Man is one of the most original new plays on the history of race, religious identity, and what it means to be free. The New York Times called it emotionally potent, and with us today to talk about it are Eric Rosen, the Rep's artistic director, who is directing this production. Eric, it's always nice to have you.
Nice to see you, Steve. Good morning.
And Michael Janay plays Simon, a former slave, and the star's Robert Trussell just raved about Michael's performance. Michael, welcome and congratulations.
It's a pleasure to be here, Steve. Yeah.
Eric, why did you pick this play to be performed at the Rep right now?
You know, this play's been on our list for about 4 years, ever since I got to Kansas City. And this was really the year that it fit best. For me, the subject is fascinating. I'm a Southerner, and I'm Jewish, and also from a mixed race background. And the play deals with the historical coincidence of Passover occurring at the time of Lincoln's assassination and also at the time of the end of the Civil War. It was during those 8 days that those two things happened, and that's really what sets the play in motion. And to me, that's Passover's always been a source of academic interest, and the play using the Seder as a metaphor and as an actual plot device made it irresistible.
Give us a sense of the plot.
Well, the plot is it's the day after the end of the Civil War, and the son of a Jewish slave-owning family has returned to Richmond to be greeted by one of his former slaves, Simon, played by Michael, another former slave also returns that night. It's a dark and stormy night, and the three of them end up sort of trapped in this bombed-out city, in this bombed-out house together for 3 days, and realize over the course of the play that some of the secrets that they didn't know come to light.
You know, Michael, tell us about this time in history, because there must have been such confusion, such chaos, and I think some of that's reflected in your character, Simon.
Well, I mean, as you can imagine, it was Armageddon for all intents and purposes, and just think about the ramifications of that time in our existence as human beings, when you didn't have Twitter and Facebook and the internet to get your information, and someone walks in and tells you, the war is over. African Americans, Negroes at that time, are suddenly free. And then, boom, the president of the United States, who helped, make come true your dream of freedom, has suddenly been assassinated. Mm-hmm. You get that all by word of mouth. And for Simon, he was standing in the middle of the town market when the announcement came. Some guy rode right up, and it's a white Southerner, and he announces it with joy and relish in his mouth, in his heart, and how that pierces the heart of Simon, who is the beneficiary of the newfound freedom. And and seeing everyone else around him, the whites in the town, celebrating with joy because these are white Southerners, and they had just lost the war, obviously. So there was elation for them, but for blacks to have to find out, it's like when Dr. King was assassinated. Oh my God! I mean, your Moses, your savior, has just been cut down. The tragedies upon everything else, and then suddenly you realize, oh my God, I'm set free. I'm able to do, theoretically, what every other human being is able to do. But because I've been brought over here and birthed here without any roots, really, of my own, where do I go? What do I do? Confusion is an understatement.
So maybe it's appropriate the play begins on this dark and stormy night when so much is just swirling around everybody.
It's like the tornadoes that run through Tornado Alley from time to time. Yeah. You're caught up in the vortex, and what do you do? Where do you go?
And with all this new technology, Facebook, Twitter, iPhones and all this, it almost seems harder to understand how folks back then survived without it. I mean, a few years ago I could get it, but nowadays I'm like,
well, can you imagine, seriously, can you imagine life without a DVD player now, without a cell phone?
Yeah.
I mean, I would not know what to do with myself.
Yeah, exactly. Well, how does Simon adjust and react to all of this?
Well, Simon is the one in the play who has the sense of loyalty that is undying. And so his loyalty, first and foremost, is to the family that he has been a part of. It's, I mean, he was a slave, but he considers himself part of that family. And they, as he says, we shared a faith. You know, we grew up in this house generations together in the faith of God. And the faith was
the Jewish faith.
Mm-hmm. So his initial reaction is to stay there, to be loyal, to protect this house. It's only a shell. And so that's a statement in and of itself. This man is staying there by himself because the owners themselves have gone off to Williamsburg and points beyond. Mm-hmm. But he's staying here to protect their property.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who does that?
Yeah, yeah. And the Jewish faith, Eric, is at the core of this play because why?
Well, I think the metaphor of people whose sort of central myth is that we were slaves under Pharaoh in Egypt is the story of Passover, that the historical irony, I guess, of Jews in the South being slave owners themselves, what complications slavery made in the lives of Americans, particularly Jewish Americans are meant to stand in for all Americans, that we're all, even those of us who think of ourselves as being oppressed minorities, have the capacity mm-hmm. to participate in systems that are horribly oppressive, and how Caleb, the young Jewish man in the play, comes to realize the depth of his implication in the sort of destruction of these other lives is central to the plot and to the story as a metaphor of liberation descends on these people in a literal way. It's like the first Passover ever. Mm-hmm. These mm-hmm. three guys celebrating their first night of freedom, much as the Jewish stories would tell us.
You know, and again, slavery is very much at the root of this play. What does it begin to say about slavery and our ongoing struggles to sort of deal with it, Eric?
Well, I think that, Bob Trussell in The Star today talked about this play making us think that slavery is at the heart of our very dysfunctional American family, and has we all have these secret histories that are related to this 150-year-old struggle.
We're still dealing with it, he said.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think if you live in I moved to Kansas City 4 years ago, and I was fascinated by the Civil War history here, the lines that divide the city, the rivers that divide the city, the streets that divide the city.
The rivalry between the Tigers and the Jayhawks is so intense, you know where it came from. You can feel that.
Indeed,
you know?
And then we're living on the lines between slavery and freedom, literally,
in
this town, and I think that's, in a way, what the play is most about.
Yeah. What do you think of it? What's the connection to slavery with you, and what does it say about slavery, Michael, as you look at all this?
Well, the play itself saying about it? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a metaphor for – well, it's not even a metaphor. I mean, it was an absolute visceral, tangible rope that tied us all together that mm-hmm. Still reigns today. We are all still slaves, and I mean all of us, in some context, one way or the other. I mean – the irony is, I don't know if you all saw it, there's a write-up today about it's tragic in a smaller context, but there are people that are taking to the blogs now who are complaining. These are very ignorant people, obviously, about the movie Hunger Games because there are two young actors in the movie, and I had not seen the film, that are black. Now, in the books, the author characterize these characters not as necessarily black, but of people of dark brown skin. So these people have gone to see this film now, which made $155 million domestic.
First weekend,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, but they see these actors who are kids, and they're black. And so they're taken to the blogs to say, oh, my God, why did all the good roles have to be played by black people in this movie? Oh, my God, this role is played by a black? Oh, my God, I'm not going to go see it. This is 2012.
Yeah.
It's demarcated in the book as such, but people are still slaves in their mind or oppressors in their mind today to be heaping that kind of hatred out there. It's the embodiment of why Trayvon Martin is now the hot button issue, you know, and we have people that whether you believe, you know, one side of the story or not. I mean, you know what I mean? We have not gotten over that hump. Dr. King's speech of I have a dream, you know, that one day the color of your skin and the content of your heart will be the marks by which we're all graded against. We're getting there, but we aren't there yet.
And yet a lot of folks think because we have an African-American president, we are there.
And I would love to say that is true. I think the fact that we do have Barack as president has been historic beyond any of our real concepts, but it's also brought brought out, in some instances, the worst of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so sad to say. And that's why I've said this to Eric last week, and I'll say it here on the air.
Yeah.
I think Kansas City should be really proud of Eric Rosen and the Kansas City rep for undertaking this play. They did not have to do that. And the public who are listening to this show right now, I would urge you to come out and see it, because for the Kansas City rep to stick their neck out and do a play of this magnitude, of this power, that is so apropos to where we are as a society today, mm-hmm. you got to honor this man, Eric Rosen, for having the courage to do this. You got to honor the playwright for having the courage to write it, and Kansas City rep for doing it, because it didn't have to be. And you're not going to get this kind of production every day.
Did you ever hesitate to bring it to town for all the reasons that Michael just laid out here?
Oh, you know me, not for a second.
I think that, you know, I knew the answer to that when I asked.
Absolutely.
It, yeah.
You know, the bravery of the story is so amazing. And what's great about it is, you know, audiences are just not just that they love it and they stand up and cheer every night, which is great, but they're staying in the theater for 20 minutes after the curtain, talking mm-hmm. to each other, strangers talking to each other, people really wanting to stay in the experience together. And we're getting a very diverse audience, and it's really it's my favorite thing.
I should point out the Whipping Man runs through April 8th. More information on our website, kcur.org, and it's appropriate for high school age and up.
Yep. In fact, on Thursday morning, we have our first all high school matinee, which we're really excited about.
Yeah. Are you going to do anything special with it in terms of a conversation afterwards?
Yeah, we do a dialogue with the actors on Thursday morning after we do the performance at 10 a.m. We're also doing two faith nights this week with Brian Ellison, who's also on the radio, is leading an interfaith dialogue about the show and the issues it presents.
Well, you know, Michael, you've worked with different directors over the years. What's Eric Rosen's style of direction? How does he differ from other directors you've worked with over the years?
Be nice.
Well, no, in all honesty, I don't have anything to gauge Eric by, because I've never worked with him before. I've mm-hmm. never seen any other production he's done. I will say this in all honesty: what I loved working with Eric with on this was the fact that he got out of our way. He let us go up there, because some directors can be very rigid. Okay, I want you to enter through the door, take two steps to your right, upstage right, and do it. Eric didn't do any of that. He quickly realized that, okay, these guys have a kind of a strong handle on this material. Let me just let them play and see where it goes. And when he needed to step in, he stepped in. Now, where he was, and that's, trust me, that is to be absolutely applauded.
So he's an actor's director.
Oh, he was smooth as butter for us on this. But he was also hands-on when he needed to be. And for me, that was particularly important with regards to the Seder. We do an actual Seder on stage. Now, I'm an African-American man, so I had no knowledge of the ritual of the Seder. And I got to tell you, and I told Eric too, doing the Seder every night scares me to death, because I want to be completely honest and truthful and faithful to the Jewish faith and all of our Jewish audience members who come. I do not want to do anything that's misrepresentative mm-hmm. or in any way disrespectful in the way I perform this Seder. And having Eric there to guide us with his hand and his knowledge was absolutely integral. I mean, it couldn't have gotten there without it.
Why do you approach it that way? Why do you give your actors so much rein?
Well, it's in some plays, it's all about, you know, there are three guys in this play, and I knew the day I met Michael.
Veteran guys.
Yeah.
All guys been that around the block.
Yeah. Well, Michael, there's an amazing group. There's Michael, Josh Breckenridge, who just got off Scottsboro Boys and is just about to go out on Book of Mormons, who's a younger actor. Kyle Hatley, our associate artistic director. When I met Josh and Michael, when I cast them the day they walked into audition, I thought, well, my job's done. These are the guys, they can do this. And my job is to make it look really scary, to make the rain look cool, and to make it go fast.
And it did.
Yep, it's real scary.
Yeah. What's next this season?
We just today are starting rehearsals for Little Shop of Horrors, our season ender down at the Copacan stage.
Yeah.
It's to kind of lighten up the mood a little bit, have some fun. But even that, you know, we're actually taking a little risk where we've a really multi-race cast the show not according to how it was originally cast. So we have an African-American Audrey and a Latino Seymour and a white – one of the Renettes is white. And we're just always trying to play with the expectations. So
you just can't do things the easy way, can you?
Well, this one's going to be amazing. we've got a band on stage with the plant singing on stage. It's going to be really cool.
Yeah. Well, Eric Rosen, it's been great to have you. Michael, Janae, nice to meet you too. And
you
good
too.
Luck with the run of The Whipping Man. It runs through April 8th, right?
Yep,
more information at kcur.org.